And Lynn, our next presentation is from the Aquaculture Association with Sebastian Bell, who's the executive director. Welcome.
Thank you, Representative. I hope Senator Miramont will rejoin us. Honorable members of the committee, my name is Sebastian Bell. I am the director of the Maine Aquaculture Association, and I'm going to see if I can share my screen. And okay. As I said, my name is Sebastian Bell. I'm the director of the Maine Aquaculture Association. And I want to thank the committee and all of you for allowing me to address you today. Just a little bit of background about myself. Many of you know me, but for the new members, I started as a commercial fisherman. I fished offshore for 10 years and then went into the aquaculture business. I spent a little bit of time in state government. I worked for the DMR for a few years as a policy advisor. And then I also worked for the environmental community. I worked for the New England Aquarium for a few years, doing some research projects for them. But most of my career has been in the commercial aquaculture sector and running farms or building farms, both in Maine, but also in other parts of the world. I want to just start by telling you a little bit about our association and then maybe some key issues that you will probably hear about this session and try to answer any questions that you may have. So the Maine Aquaculture Association was started in 1977 and actually incorporated in 1978. We are the oldest aquaculture association in the country. And we represent basically the commercial growers in the state. On any given year, we represent probably the majority of most of the commercial growers in the state. Some years people have a bad year and they don't pay their dues, and so they're not members. But by and large, most of the growers in the state are members in our association. We are funded by voluntary dues, so growers pay a per acre fee. Much the same as they pay a lease fee to the state on a per acre basis. And the reason we structured it that way is so that people could, it was all public information. It was, you know, whatever, however many acres you had, that was the fee you paid. And there was no kind of debate about how much you should pay or not. So what that means is that bigger farmers pay more dues than smaller farmers. But the really important point, I think, for people to understand about the association is it's one company, one vote. So it doesn't matter how big you are as a company, you have one vote. And it doesn't matter how small you are as a company, you have one vote. And that was originally conceived that way back in the 70s because the founders of this association wanted it to be an egalitarian association. And so that was how that was structured. We have a very divisive. Hey, you going? You hear me? I don't know whose radio is going off, but it's not mine. We have a very diverse membership, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But I want to also just highlight a couple of areas that we work in. You folks will see me before you whenever there's a bill in the legislature regarding aquaculture. But frankly, most of our work is outside the legislature. And these are the areas that we work in from an association point of view. And in particular, the areas that we've spending most of our time in this day and age is the development of best management practices, the training of growers to make sure that they are not making mistakes as they grow their companies, and business support for those companies. We have a young man who graduated from UMaine who is an economist, and he spends a lot of time helping the farmers make sure that their businesses are viable, are competitive, and are profitable as they begin to build their companies. And then the final area that we spend a lot of time in is on education and outreach. And there's actually a gal on this Zoom meeting, Afton Hupper, who again is a UMaine graduate, and she does an amazing job communicating with both communities and members and customers about what it is that our members do and also what it is that they don't do. There's a lot of misinformation out there about what aquaculture is or isn't. And we're very lucky to have Afton. She has taken us into the modern world with social media and has told the story of our members through video projects that you will see over the next few years. She's producing a whole series of videos about what our members do. So aquaculture has been around in Maine a lot longer than most people realize. On the left-hand side, you see a picture of the Boothe Bay Harbor Laboratory, which is now the DMR lab. But in the late 1800s, it was actually a cod hatchery, and it was designed to produce small cod to release out into the wild and to up the cod numbers because the cod population was down. On the right-hand side, you see the first commercial aquaculture grower in the state, Ed Myers. Ed Myers was a mussel grower down on the Damariscotta River, and Ed was the first person to get an aquaculture lease in the 70s in the state of Maine, and really mentored a lot of our early shellfish growers in the state. He was also, interestingly, one of the first people who began to raise the alarm about climate change and global warming. And Ed was talking about those issues long before anybody else was in the state or even in the nation. He founded a local environmental group, which the growers have funded for many years, that focuses on local environmental issues and environmental monitoring. It's called the Ed Myers Fund. So we have, as I said, a very diverse sector in the state. We grow shellfish, finfish, and sea vegetables. Sea vegetables are our most recent addition to the aquaculture sector. We actually grow almost, I think, 24, 25 different species in the last count that we looked at. But the principal species that we grow are oysters, mussels, salmon, and various species of seaweed. We have roughly 190 farms right now, and they occupy 1,650 acres. And one of the things you'll hear about in the session is how much space aquaculture occupies and issues around growth. And we'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later. And on any given year, the farm gate value of the products that we grow in the state of Maine is between $80 and $100 million. And that's what the first point of sale is. And then if you look beyond that down the value chain, you can probably multiply that by about 1.8 for the total value to aquaculture to the state. We employ roughly 700 people year round. And then we add to that during the summer. We often have seasonal workers, and roughly another 30% or 25% of that are seasonal workers in the summer. So we have a very diverse sector, and that is really one of the strengths. And we have discovered that is our strength during the COVID event. We have diversity both in terms of species. We also have diversity in terms of the size of companies that we have. We have everything from somebody who never graduated high school and has one person, it's an owner-operator, all the way up to a company that employs 250 people. And has a processing plant and multiple farms and everything in between. All of our farms, except for four of them, are family owned. And the four that are not family owned are, we have three land-based recirculating aquaculture proposals, which are going through the permitting process and being proposed in the state. And so you probably heard about them. They're located in Bucksport, Belfast, and Jonesboro. And then we also have a seaweed company, which has some investment in it, aside from the people who are operating it. So all of the farms, except for those four companies, are family-owned companies. That has really been a very powerful strength that we have had. They are people who have founded their own companies. They're entrepreneurs. They've had to fight their way up through a very tough permitting system and a very tough market. And as a result of that, they're very entrepreneurial. They're very strong-willed. They're very creative. They're small business people, much the same as many of the other businesses we have here in Maine are. I'm gonna start with an apology to you as a committee. For some reason, and it's not clear to me why, but for some reason, aquaculture is often the problem child in front of your committee, and you're going to hear probably some scary stuff about aquaculture. And some of the stuff is going to be intentionally scary, designed to make you worried about what aquaculture is and what it could be. And those messages will focus around probably three different areas. The first thing you're probably going to hear is that industrialized aquaculture is going to take over the state, and industrialized, everybody knows that industries are bad. They're big, and big is bad. And so you're going to hear about industrialized aquaculture, and people probably will suggest that that is a bad thing for the state. And what I want to just say is that remember that our diversity, big companies and small companies, has proven to be a strength in the COVID situation. One of the things we've seen is our small growers, when the restaurant industry collapsed, which it really did, our small growers in particular were in the worst position. They had no markets for their product, and they were struggling to get their product to anywhere, to sell it to anybody. And one of the things that happened is our bigger growers stepped in and helped the small growers get into markets like a Hannaford or like a Wegmans. So that mix of big and small has proven to be part of our strength in the state. And that was a really important strength for us compared to some of the other states in the country where the small growers have really taken it in the teeth in the COVID situation. Understand that 80% of seafood in the United States is consumed in restaurants. And so when the restaurant sector went through that difficulty and continues to go through that difficulty, that means that many people stopped eating seafood and consumption went down. The other thing you'll probably hear about, and I'll put a slide up here, is the idea that we are experiencing explosive growth in the state, that aquaculture is exploding, there's a gold rush mentality, and that we're going to take over state waters. And I think, again, it's important to put this in perspective. In the last 20 years, we have added roughly 500 acres to the total number of acres leased in the state of Maine. 500 acres is the average size of a potato farm in Aroostook County. So we've added one potato farm in 20 years to the acreage. Now, there are pending applications, and this is a summary of the pending applications that are in front of the Department of Marine Resources. And you can see that there are quite a few of them. And if you look at the number of applications that are currently pending, this includes both completed applications and applications that have been submitted but aren't complete yet to the department. The total number of acres that are being considered is roughly 360 acres and 38 applications in total. At the current rate that the Department of Marine Resources is reviewing applications and considering them, those 38 applications will probably take 2 to 3 years to process. So those are the hard numbers. That's the data you're looking at in terms of what the potential growth is if every application that was in the system was approved as we stand today. So think a little bit about the slide that Marianne showed about the lobster industry and the growth that they've experienced. To go from 20 million to 100 million in essentially a 10-year period, compared to what we're talking about here in the aquaculture world, where you're going from basically 1,200 acres to a little bit over 1,600 acres in a 20-year period. That's kind of the potential comparison you have in terms of growth between the two sectors. And the last thing you're probably going to hear from people is that DMR is overwhelmed with these applications, that they don't have the resources or the capacity to manage the sector appropriately. And I want to take a moment to say very clearly and very directly that even though there are times when I disagree with the department and the commissioner, Pat Kelleher, and Deputy Commissioner Meredith Mendelson, and Deirdre Gilbert and all the aquaculture division folks know that there are times when I can be a little bit difficult and object to what they're proposing and argue with them hard. But even though that happens, I have a tremendous amount of respect for the department and the hard work and professionalism that they bring to management of the sector. They really have established a gold standard in terms of how to manage the aquaculture sector, to the point where people come from other states and even other countries to visit Maine to see how we manage the aquaculture sector. And the most recent set of visitations were some folks from Nova Scotia who came to Maine to look at how aquaculture is managed. And then they went back to Nova Scotia. And if you look at the rules and regulations they passed in Nova Scotia, they are essentially based on the Maine regulations. They are based on how we manage aquaculture here. So I agree that DMR is under-resourced, and that's exactly the reason why my board of directors met with the governor 3 weeks ago and sat down with her and expressed our concern about the resources the department had and argued that the commissioner, Pat Kelleher, needed more resources and that he needed more staff in order to be able to manage the sector. And to the governor's credit, she agreed to give Pat more resources, enough to hire 2 additional people in the department to increase their ability to manage the aquaculture sector. And I think both the governor and the commissioner deserve a great deal of credit for recognizing that need and going to bat. So I would ask this committee, as you go forward, to support the department's request for resources. You will find that there are only 2 groups in the state that go every year in front of appropriations to support more resources for the department, and that is my colleague Patrice McCarron in the Maine Lobstermen's Association and myself, the Maine Aquaculture Association. We go before appropriations every year to argue for more resources for the department. And other groups which complain about the lack of the department's ability to manage the sector, complain about the lack of resources, they have never appeared before appropriations to argue for resources for the department. So I would ask that you keep that in mind. In closing, I would like to thank the committee. I thank you and your charge and your predecessors have worked very hard on the aquaculture leasing system. Some of your colleagues in the Environmental and Natural Resources Committee have worked very hard on some of the environmental regulations that apply to aquaculture as well. It's not just a DMR permit, but if you're in the finfish world, you have to get a DEP permit. You have to get permits for the feds as well. Always remember that many, many changes and revisions have happened to the leasing system over the years, and that the current leasing system is the product of 45 years of discussion, legislative discussion, and public discussion and debate about how to manage the aquaculture sector appropriately and carefully so that it fits into the traditions that we have here in Maine and on our wonderful, clean Maine waters. So thank you very much for the time, and I would be glad to answer any questions. And one other offer I would make is, and I spoke to Representative McCrate earlier about this, we have conducted a number of virtual tours on some of our farms. We used to do in-person tours every year for the legislators, both in cooperation with some of our commercial fishing colleagues and also in cooperation with some of our agricultural colleagues. And obviously we can't do that now, but we would offer to have some virtual tours for you where you could meet the farmers directly. They use their phones. We've done them a couple of times, and they're actually quite fun. So I know your time is valuable, but if you're interested in doing a virtual tour, more than willing to do that as well. And thank you very much for your time.
Sebastian Bell, so nice to see you. Thank you for the presentation today. One of the things that you didn't mention that I think is important to mention, and you want to talk about it a little bit, is the advantages to the environment that shellfish aquaculture have. And you know, I always think of when I think of aquaculture in Maine, I think of it in two ways. I think of finfish and I think of seaweed and shellfish in very different ways, because they are very different ways. The shellfish is more like, we're sort of like keeping bees. It's good for the environment. It might also help reduce ocean acidification if done with seaweed farming. And I don't know if you talked about objections that we might hear. Has anyone ever objected to shellfish and the effect on the environment?
Thank you, Representative Bloom. Good to see you again. And you bring up a great point, and that just tells you that I'm not a marketer. I'm just a farmer who's washed up on shore, that I didn't bring it up. All of the aquaculture that we have in the state has different kinds of environmental benefits. But shellfish and seaweed certainly have some very strong environmental benefits. And in particular, around the issue of climate change and global warming, shellfish and seaweed have some real assets in terms of reducing in terms of their ability to absorb carbon and help mitigate ocean acidification. Those two things in particular are really big assets for both shellfish and seaweed. And then, you know, with respect to finfish, there are concerns around finfish in terms of environmental impact. But I would just say very simply, for anybody who is interested, go and dive around a finfish farm. And what you find is they create ecosystems, they create habitat, and you have all sorts of little juvenile fish swimming around there, and juvenile scallops and juvenile lobsters and sea urchins. And they are essentially new habitat in an area from an environmental point of view. So there are benefits to all three, but certainly shellfish and seaweed have very strong benefits in terms of climate change.
Thank you.
And Representative Thorne?
Yes. Hello, Mr. Bell. Representative Jim Thorne up here in Carmel.
Nice to meet you, sir.
it's no surprise to any of the other board members that my extensive knowledge to marine resources is limited. So I have about two pages of questions, but I'm only going to ask you a couple, okay?
No worries. And I'm glad to take a sidebar meeting with you and answer all your questions if you.
Absolutely. I guess I'll ask the most important one that is on my mind, is only because, again, I'm not in the industry, so it's an outside perspective. What's the relationship between the commercial fishermen versus the industrial aquaculture?
Sure. So let's start with how the industry has changed over time. In the 70s, when it was first started, it was a bunch of small growers many of whom were fishermen, who were starting out. And then over time, it became more professionalized. People started to come in from the kind of marine biology side of things, and were trained as marine biologists and scientists. And now, within the last 10 years, we've had a whole influx of commercial fishermen, or the sons and daughters of commercial fishermen, who are coming in principally because the fisheries that they are in are either in rough shape or they're closed. So particularly for young the sons and daughters of commercial fishermen who can't get a permit, aquaculture has proved to be one of the ways to continue their family traditions. We run, in cooperation with the Maine Sea Grant, the Maine Aquaculture Innovation Center, Coastal Enterprises Institute, we run a training academy every year. It's called Aquaculture in Shared Waters, and that started 15 years ago. And when we first started, I think we had 8 students. The current academy that we're running now has 40 students in it. virtually all of them are commercial fishermen who are learning aquaculture as a technique. And the reason they are is because they want to diversify their economic base. They want to bet hedge against risk. So if something bad happens to the lobster fishery, they will have another way to make a living. And so that's one answer. The second answer to your question is the leasing criteria, the criteria that the state uses to determine whether a lease is granted or not, specifically prohibit the Department of Marine Resources from granting a lease if there is a significant commercial fishery in that area. So if there is a commercial fishery in an area, you are not going to get your lease. It's really that simple. There has been, frankly, a campaign to try to scare some of the commercial fishing folks in the state about aquaculture and suggest that aquaculture is going to displace them. But if you look at the laws, it just is not.
And I hate to interrupt you, but before I forget my thought, how far, what's the distance barrier that they consider a commercial operation to a aquaculture operation? Is there a distance minimum?
So the only distance is with respect to our salmon farms. There is a 300-foot buffer zone. And the reason for that is because in Cobscook Bay, during scallop and urchin season, some of the best urchin and scallop fishing is right under the scallop, the salmon farms. And so the draggers were backing down right up against the cages and dropping their drags. And if the tide was running, they would put their drag through the net on the salmon farm and the salmon would escape. So that's the only buffer zone with respect to commercial fishing in the state.
And I have a two-part follow-up, and then I won't take any more of the committee's time, but I know to myself and probably Representative Stanley, the information is pertinent to us. Two-part question. One, what do you consider to be your biggest impediment to new growth and new operations? You mentioned 38 new leases that are out there that obviously there's some things that impede that being approved. And I can surmise, but I'd like to hear you say what the primary ones are. And then secondly, and I'll let you answer, thank you very much, is what can we do at Marine Resources Committee in the legislature to help your business outside of appropriations? Thank you.
Great questions, Representative, and thank you so much. I can tell you are going to be a valuable member to this committee. Good questions are important. In terms of the greatest impediment, I think there are two things. One is the ability of the Department of Marine Resources to process lease applications in a timely fashion. And the second impediment, quite frankly, and this is unfortunately where your committee will be kind of stuck in the middle, is the changes demographically that are happening along the coast of Maine. If you look at coastal communities in Maine, in the year 2000, people moving into those communities from away outnumbered live births in those communities. And what that means is that the coastal communities of Maine are changing, and many people who live there, in fact, most people who live in many of those communities, didn't grow up in those communities, are not linked to working waterfronts, don't understand that working waterfronts are an important part of those communities and need to be preserved.
And crack them be often, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that I would say that's the second biggest barrier that we have. And then in terms of what your committee can do, I would say, listen to the department. The department is comprised of a tremendously hardworking group of individuals who really care about the state and who really care about working waterfronts. As I said earlier, I don't always agree with them, and they will, I'm sure, get a chuckle about that. But I have enormous respect for them and their ability to judge what is reasonable and fair and responsible from a management point of view. So that would be what I would say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have another question from Representative Hepler.
Hey, hi, Sebastian. I have a comment and a question. First, a comment is, I was just really impressed with the creativity with which many of our local aquaculturists were able to survive or adapt to COVID. I saw that all summer, and I really appreciate that. And it was nice to hear that connection between the large growers and the small growers. The other thing is, I'm a historian, and I'm fascinated by this cod hatchery. And I was looking in my main history books while you were talking, and I can't find anything about it. Where should I go to find out information about that?
So Representative Hepler, first of all, good to see you again. And thank you for all your hard work over the years here on this committee. And thank you also for recognizing the creativity that our members have really exhibited during COVID. I couldn't agree with you more. I've been incredibly impressed by their level of creativity. And I will tell you, I had many sleepless nights where I worried that we were going to lose people because of COVID. And they rose to the occasion. They did, and they are still doing amazing things to move product and most importantly, I think, to support the main brand. They really are pushing the main brand and building that identity around this amazing seafood that they produce. In terms of the cod hatchery, I had to dig and dig and dig, and I actually stumbled. I knew about it, but I stumbled on that picture, and I'm trying to remember where it was. I think it was an old U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service publication, because it was a hatchery, I think, that had some linkage to the federal government as well, and it was. There used to be, and I don't know if anybody from the department is on the Zoom or not, but there used to be a librarian down at the Booth Bay Harbor lab in DMR. And I remember talking to her at one point about the history of that building, and she had some information there as well. So, but if you're interested in trying to dig out more, I would love to work with you to do it, because I'd love to get more. It's a fascinating story. It was actually quite a productive hatchery. It produced a lot of juvenile cod. Unfortunately, it didn't make a big difference to the cod stocks. It was not terribly successful that way, and that's why it's no longer there.
Yeah, I also have a couple of books that have some old Booth Bay history, Booth Bay Harbor newspaper articles. Also look through those. So thanks. Yeah. New project.
Thank you.
Yeah. I have a question. We have someone who's joined by phone and wonder if they could identify themselves. It's 266-3146.
That's Jim Hanscom.
Okay. Say it again, please, Ginny.
If I may, Representative, yes, I think it's Jim Hanscom. He's going to be presenting from the Maine Lobstering Union.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And if he can't change his name himself, would somebody put that in as his name, please?
Yes, I'm doing that right now, Senator.
Thank you.
We obviously needed to leave more time for aquaculture. There's lots more to learn. We have one more question, then we should move on. And Sebastian, you will definitely be back. We'll have at least one bill, probably a couple, but lots more to learn. And Representative Thorne a chat. Happy to talk aquaculture anytime to give you some more. Your questions were great, by the way. Thank you. Representative Crafts, and then we'll move on.
Thank you. Hi, Sebastian. I just wanted some clarification. When you mentioned the two impediments to expansion or development of aquaculture, you mentioned the time to process applications through the DMR. And I'm just wondering, are you referring to the personnel shortage and just staffing needs, or are there other barriers within that process that take up that time?
No, you're correct. It is the staffing and personnel needs, and as I said earlier, we have argued hard for additional resources for the department. And I hope that those will help. And I also want to just make the point that, you know, even without those staff, the DMR staff, the existing DMR staff, has done an amazing job. They are just an incredibly hardworking group of people. They have really worked hard to process applications in a timely fashion. It's just been that they have not had the resources to do that.
Great, thank you for that.
Yeah.
And there have been tweaks to how the system's done over time to bring more public comment in. Senator Mearmont mentioned yesterday, the department's generally here whenever we meet and very available. They're also available to people in the industry. So I had an aquaculture harvester recently who had a long list of ideas, and that was, you had a conversation with the department, and you know, they're open to listening, and that's how changes come. But yeah, staff has been an issue. So I thank you so much for being here. We have lots more to learn.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.